This is a replay of the Tuesday night, August 15th, WGN show when we started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from OneVoIP. For the world's best customer service, it's OneVoIP. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe. It's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. 3 hours to spend together. You can interrupt the show as you like. 888-876-5593. I'll try to give you reason. I've been puzzling over this this first item now for about 3 days. It comes under the heading of So You See What Happened Was. Yeah, right. We went and got the mail on Saturday, and there were four, count them four, letters from the Motor Vehicle Division, ADOT. In Arizona. And they're all addressed to John, all four of them. Now, we were looking for a letter from ADOT because, as you might know, John had a hemorrhagic stroke a while ago, and they did not pull his driver's license at all. No official decision to do that. They thought, well, you know, he'll handle that on his own. What I wanted to do was make sure that John was assessed so that there was never any question that he was able to drive in the event of an accident or something like that. I thought, you know, better to get the assessment. And so we went and did that in July, and he passed with flying colors and, did better than most people who never had a stroke and all that kind of stuff. So, okay, fine. And at the time they said, all right, well, we'll forward the paperwork to ADOT, and the Motor Vehicle Division will send you a letter saying you're cleared to drive. Now, like I say, there was never anything that he wasn't cleared to drive previously. All right, so that's the setup. So I see four, count them, four letters from ADOT. And I open them. Now, they're all dated on July 18th of 2023, every last one of them. So I don't know in what order they fall because they're letters. They're not emails, so they're not time-stamped in any way. They're just dated, all July 18th. All right, so the first one actually is almost informative. It says MVD has placed correspondence for you to access through azmvdnow.gov. The subject of the correspondence is a medical review program requirement has been issued to you. All right, fine. Well, the only problem is John doesn't have an azmvdnow.gov account. Before I could even wonder about that, I opened the next envelope. And again, I assume that I'm reading these now in order. I had to take a look at this a few times since they're all on July 18th. So in the interest of public health, safety, and welfare, they are suspending John's driver's license on July 18th. Okay, so that's one. And saying medical report required. Very good. Next one on July 18th. In the interest of public health, safety, and welfare, we are revoking John's driver's license. Okay. Then we get another one saying that we need the following information in order to reinstate John's driver's license. By the way, they say the following information. There's nothing following. Then we get the fourth one. Dear customer, you may now proceed to the next step in the process by completing the requirements marked below in order to be eligible for a Class D operator license. And the one that is checked says other, meets medical standards, no further action required at this time. So I look at this, and the first thing John says, well, do I have a driver's license? I said, beats the hell out of me. And so yesterday we trundled on down to the motor vehicle division, which fortunately in small towns, it's not a long wait or anything like that. I can at least praise them for that. And I give all four letters to the clerk at hand, who immediately says, huh, yeah. And I thought, yep, that same huh, that's what I thought too. What do you think? And she said, well, how about if we access John's driving records? I said, okay. She said, it'll cost you $3. I said, fine, I don't care. We'll give you a credit card. Here's $3. And yeah, so we pay the $3 and we access John's driving record. And there is nothing on any of it about a suspension, about a revocation. It's a 39-month report as of 8/14 that says that John is absolutely licensed to drive. Not only that, he has a motorcycle endorsement. All right. I'm not sure how wise that is, but he's not planning to use that. And it's got 39 months worth of data. And what we discovered in 39 months is that there was absolutely no points, no tickets, no nothing at any point. In none of this time was there a suspension. In none of this time was there a revocation. See, but in none of this time was there even anything medically required. He is just licensed. And so I made copies of that and put it in the glove box. But as we've been talking about this in terms of what the hell is with the four letters, I think that I figured it out. Now, no one at ADOT figured it out, but I think I've got it handled. I could be wrong. And I assume that, like I say, artificial stupidity. I assume that this is all software related. And probably when they got a report from the agency that certifies drivers medically, they didn't have any report that would indicate he needed to be certified medically. And so at that point, before anybody could enter that he was certified to drive medically, they first had to uncertify him. And they not only had to uncertify him, but they also had to revoke the license before they could reinstate the license. I am not making this up. But I looked at this and I figure this has got to be just bad programming all the way around. And how artificial the intelligence is, I don't know. But I thought to myself, we're doomed. We're absolutely doomed. So everybody who is worried about artificial intelligence taking over, I think we're a while from that. So there's our horror. Maybe you have something to share with the class. I would love to know what it is. Now, before I do anything else, let me mention the new moon is coming up early tomorrow morning, Wednesday morning, August 16th, 4:38 a.m. Central. Now, if you're going to be writing your law of abundance check, I don't want you to stay up until 4:38. Just do it before you go to bed tonight. And if you have no idea what the law of abundance is about, go to maryannwinkowski.com. And no, it doesn't cost you anything. The checks aren't real. All right, so 888-876-5593-8888-RALEIGH. You know, right now, I think the biggest news item amid everything else is what's been going on in Maui. And, yeah, we've all been looking at that banyan tree, wondering and hoping. Well, if you were in a situation like that, and for people who are in Maui, what you discover in the event of something like horrific wildfires is, yeah, so much for the internet, that's down. So much for electricity, that's down. What do you have? Well, you've got radio. And that's where the Sea Crane Company comes in. You know, I mentioned many times that Bob Crane should be knighted for this, but years ago, when he saw the state of AM and FM reception in most radios, he thought, I can do better. And boy, has he. Yeah, I'd say as far as selectivity and receptivity, AM and FM, there's nothing better than the Sea Crane products. But not only that, every one of them has additional benefits that are just neater than the next one. And when the Maui thing broke out, the first thing I thought is, oh man, I hope they all have CC radio solars. It's an innovative emergency radio, and it is just terrific. For one thing, it's going to work no matter what. That's right. You don't need batteries. You don't need electricity. You don't need solar power, though it works on that very well, and I'll get to that. If you can hand crank it for a few seconds, it's going to work for a few minutes. Yeah, hand crank it about 20 seconds, you probably got a half hour of receptivity. Not only that, but it will give you enough power to bring a dead phone battery back to life. Now, you're not going to use it on your cell phone all the time and make lots of calls, but to make that important contact, if your phone is dead, it probably will give you enough juice to make that call. And if you're sitting there wondering, you're in the middle of Maui, there's no power, there's no internet, there's no nothing. The neat thing about the CC Radio Solar is that it will work no matter what. And so, you know, let's face it, you run for the radio, and what do you want? You want two things. You want radio, you want a flashlight. Well, you run for the radio, maybe it's been a while, and the batteries are dead. You never have to worry about that with the CC Radio Solar. You just set it in a sunny window, you can listen for days. And it will, like I say, store enough energy to bring a dead phone battery back to life. But again, maybe you didn't set it in the sun. Maybe you don't have the batteries in there. Obviously, the power's not on. Well, you still will be able to get reception. Just hand crank it. It's about the size of a brick. It's got a clean, modern digital design. It's got 5 one-touch memories with superior reception, excellent audio. And by the way, when I say Bob comes up with the best AM and FM receptivity and coverage, man, do I mean it. And this is no exception. So it can be your day-to-day radio if you want it to be. It's also got a weather band, of course, and a weather alert from NOAA, and a built-in LED flashlight. So radio, when the power is out, what do you want? You want the radio, you want the flashlight? You'll get them both in the CC Radio Solar. So go online, ccradio.com or ccrane.com. The initial C, C-R-A-N-E.com, or like I like to do, ccradio.com, easy to remember. And you can read all about the CC Solar. You can also, by the way, if you're not online, and especially if you're listening right now and don't have power, well, you can give them a call. They've got the best customer service, and you can order right on the phone. And that's 800-522-8863, 800-522-TUNE. But if you got some power, go online. By the way, yes, you want quicker shipping and all that? Yeah, you can do Amazon or REI. But for the real deal experience and for great information as well as great products, and you can sign up for their newsletter, which will have you know it before anyone else, all at ccradio.com, ccradio.com. Look at the CC Radio Solar. You tell them Raleigh sent you on WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Those are the Presidents. Yeah, in fact, it's the flip side of Hey Diddle Diddle, which had always been my favorite Presidents record until I flipped it over and heard Sweet Magic. And I think that is it. I played it because it's on Sussex. And Sussex was an interesting little label, founded in 1969, defunct in 1975. And that was a horror story, to say the least. It was the IRS that came in and padlocked it. And some of the masters were never even retrieved. But nonetheless, I mention it because Clarence Avon, who is was a businessman, record executive, film producer, sadly is no longer with us. And born in 1931 in North Carolina, found Sussex, And when most people think of Sussex, they think about Bill Withers, or maybe they think of Dennis Coffey, and I understand that. But it's really weird because it was founded as a soul label, yet they have hits by things like Gallery and Wadsworth Mansion, really out there, to say the least. Well, they also had the Presidents, who were my favorite, and they were from D.C., of course, and involved with Van McCoy, who produced their big hit. And just a real neat thing. And in any event, Clarence, sadly, is no longer with us. Died yesterday at home in Los Angeles. Made it to 92 years old, though. So just a horrible situation with his wife a year ago. It's about a year and a half now. I think it was December of 2021. And Jackie. His wife was Jackie, and she was a philanthropist and just a classy woman all the way around. And they lived in a very nice house, and which was unfortunately the location of a home invasion where she was shot and killed. Yeah, 81 years old. And now Clarence at 92, rest in peace. So, yeah, had to play some Sussex as far as that goes. All right, so 888-876-5593, 8888. Raleigh, if it's on your mind, it'll be on mine. And if nothing's on your mind, well, I've got the tabloids. That's right. Slime from the checkout line. In fact, I'm not sure why, but I got right to the door free issues of both Us and The Examiner. So I'm not sure if this is enticement to subscribe again, though I'm not sure I ever did subscribe to Us. So nonetheless, when all else fails, we can look at Before. They were famous, if anyone cares. And let's see. The Secret Lives of Trump's Prosecutors Exposed. All right. So, yeah, right. So right next to stories about, say, Jack leaving Wheel of Fortune and Meghan turning her back on humiliated Harry, we have the Trump prosecutors. Why not? I guess sky's the limit when it comes to the tabloids. And, of course, we have, you know, it's funny. I always threaten to read you the tabloids, and that's what brings in calls. And I am very glad to hear it, though I'd be more than happy to review the material we have. I don't know about the secret lives of the prosecutor, because I don't know who the prosecutors are, but so much for their secret lives. Pat Robertson makes deal with the devil. Well, he's on the other side now. He could be doing just about anything. Apparently, he promoted a war criminal who helped him buy a Liberian gold mine. All right, then. So I'm sure that's fascinating information. I can't wait to hear it. So inside the secret lives of the prosecutors gunning for the ex-president, we have Jack Smith, who is married to Katie, who made a documentary about Michelle Obama. All right. So we have Fannie Willis, a Georgia DA, the daughter of a former Black Panther, John Floyd, an admirer of Malcolm X. Okay. I'll bet that's not a secret. And the Manhattan DA, a dad of two with wife, Hamila, charged Trump with paying hush money to a porn star. I believe we knew that story. That's not news. Yeah, the tabloids are striking out again. But we've got to find out about the war criminal, though, and the Liberian gold mine. Monstrous Liberian dictator Charles Taylor and soldiers in the capital of Monrovia in 2003. So Pat Robertson makes deal with the devil. Well, the devil on earth in this case. See, I was hoping for the real deal, you know, like kind of like those near-death experiences, although in his case, he wouldn't have come back. All right, so Leah is in Marcus Hook. Welcome. Let me say that. I was about to do that, but I realize I'm walking all over the news again, and we have legitimate stories to share, and David Jennings is going to do just that on WGN Radio News. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Yeah, another Sussex. That's Faith, Hope, and Charity. So much love. 1970. All right, 888-876-5593 would be 8888, Raleigh. And we got John in Covington, Kentucky. What's up tonight, John?
Hey, Raleigh. This past Saturday, I hit a pretty nice trifecta. I don't have to pay taxes on it, but I just dabble around with the stock market when I win like that.
Uh-huh.
And I was just, and I know you probably can't say yay or nay, buy it, don't buy it. I'm not looking for that. But I was toying with the idea of buying 100 shares of Pitney Bowes, and that sounds like a lot, but they trade for like $3.54 right now. And I was just, I'm not saying you have to do it. I'm just, all I'm want to know is when you and John send out the prizes,
mm-hmm.
do you use Pitney Bowes at all?
No. We don't. We go directly to the post office. We don't have anything that deals, with stamps by mail or Pitney Bowes or metered mail or anything like that.
Okay.
I don't buy. And there's nothing wrong. I mean, Pitney Bowes has been around since like what 1900 or something. I don't know about that.
In terms of stock,
I'm by the way, the last person to ever ask about stock, and I just don't buy any. But there's no shortage of advice on that. I will say that Pitney Bowes is not going anywhere. But I understand they're probably not tremendously profitable at the moment.
They're losing money per share.
Yeah,
I know that. So
there you have that. And of course, it's a partnership with the post office, and so I couldn't tell you much about them. But do I use them? No, because I don't use any of the metering or the automation or the anything. And I just take my stuff there and say weigh it and post it. Thank you.
I just figure it this way. It's kind of found money anyway, and it's not going to cost me a whole lot. I think I'm going to do it and hold it for a year,
okay.
And then win, lose, or draw,
right.
Sell
well,
it
that's
a year from now.
Right, that's the thing. You know, I mean, as long as you look at the stock market
money.
As long as you look at like legalized gambling, if you have fun doing it and can afford to lose it, go for it.
Okay, thanks. And then the other thing I wanted to ask you, and I'm not going to subscribe to his podcast because I get enough of his podcast for free. But did I hear you say you worked with Phil Henried?
Well, we worked at the same station at the same time, but we never crossed paths because of the hours. Yes. And I thought Phil was great. And of course, he was in Ventura County when he hit the terror of the dam that we all hit when we go to small market talk radio. And it's such an awakening because you realize you just don't have callers. Now, at that point, there are several things you can do. In my case, I just perfected the art of the 4-hour monologue. But in Phil's case, that's where he started to throw his voice and be the callers as well as the host. And it was just brilliant. In general, it really came down to on a day-to-day thing, how good was the premise? When the premise was great, those shows were wonderful. When the premise was lacking, not as good. But he did a great job.
He is something else.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the other guy I wanted to ask about, if you ever worked with him, was Gary Burbank.
I know Gary very well. And,
do you?
Sadly, he's not doing too well right now. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I know.
But no,
that's what I heard.
Gary has been a close friend for 5 or 6 decades. Yeah.
Wow. And, oh, my goodness.
Yeah. We bonded over wrestling at Wacky. The program director was Johnny Randolph, and he was the ring announcer for Tuesday Night Wrestling at Louisville Gardens. And by this time, Gary was moving on, and he hadn't yet gotten to Cincinnati, but he's moving on. And I was working another station across town, but on Tuesday nights we'd go to wrestling. And,
awesome.
That's where we
not my cup of tea, but
no,
hey.
But Gary's wonderful. It's funny you mentioned that because I was thinking about him just today.
No kidding.
Yep.
Well, when he had, and I can't remember his shift, it was, anyway, noon to, it was drive time. It was 2 to 6.
Yeah, afternoon drive at WLW. But of course, before he was at WLW, I still, every time I think about this, I laugh. He was at WHAS along with the Wacky. And, you know, originally he was a Wacky, but they was at WHAS. And WHAS, just the commercial load was just extreme. You know, I mean, and so Gary took it upon himself not to run half the spots. And he got away with it.
Oh, my goodness.
And he just logged them, you know, just checked them off. Yeah, didn't run them.
How can you make money like that?
Well, it's not a question of how you make money. They were billing it, and they were getting paid. The problem is they weren't running it. Well, I think
I'd raise heck.
The general manager damn near blanched when he realized what was happening. Of course, he had to fire him. He didn't have a choice. But to this day, I laugh about, what were you thinking? Yeah, he didn't run half the spots.
When he... He had this young lady and a young man working with him on these skits that he would have, like Gilbert Gnarly.
Right.
And what was that other guy?
By the way, Gilbert Gnarly and the Piazzadora Buckeye Retirement Home or whatever.
Yeah. You got it.
Yeah. No, that was. And he had a guy, Doc, who would do a lot of these bits.
Right.
And Doc would do the senseless survey. My absolute favorite of that, when he called somebody, and at one point he said, well, you know, today is the anniversary of Liechtenstein, and I want you to sing with me the Liechtensteinian national anthem. And so he proceeds to do this, and I remember in the middle of it was Velveeta, Velveeta. It was just hilarious. And of course, that stuff was available on cassette. They would sell it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Doc was the guy, and then he had a young lady by the name of Leah.
Uh-huh.
And I think it kind of hurt Gary when they left, because they wanted to pursue, I think Leah wanted to do, law enforcement. She majored in criminal justice, and Doc went on to something else. But when those two left, he had a guy in there by the name of Duke Sinatra, and he was, I hate to say this, but he wasn't much, let's put it that way.
Well, there were a number of things that occurred behind the scene on that show, but Kevin Wolf was Doc Wolf, and he did leave, but I don't know about, I think it was Leah Burns probably, but I don't know about what happened there. I believe there is a lawsuit somewhere involved in this mix too.
Oh my goodness!
When it was J-Core, and it's been too long. But Leah Burns was the plaintiff, and she sued J-Core. I don't remember what happened, but she got some summary judgment, but I don't know. And it went back, I think she filed in 99, and I'm doing this off the top of my head, but I'll bet you this stuff is online. You can probably read the whole complaint, and you know how that is.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your time.
Absolutely.
Thank you
so much. Good to talk to you. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
All right. So 888-876-5593, 8888, Raleigh. And I assume, by the way, it was my least favorite cases. It was some type of sexual harassment, by the way. And, especially when they stem from what you're doing on the air. As far as I'm concerned, you're playing a role on the air. And my favorite, as far as, opportunity missed, was a woman in Pittsburgh who was a sidekick on Morning News. And the host had said something, introduced her and said she has tattooed on her forehead, don't pull on my ears, I know what I'm doing. And, of course, she in a huff wind up suing, and I thought to myself, I live for those kind of lines. Because, if a morning guy threw me that line, I'd say, yeah, and I don't understand it, because everybody keeps saying that you do this better. That's it. Usually the host won't recover. But instead of stepping up to the plate and realize that, what you're doing is a role, some people wind up suing, and sometimes they're successful. The woman in Pittsburgh was, and that broke my heart. So 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh, and we have Leah in Marcus Hook. Hello, Leah.
Hi, Raleigh. How are you tonight?
I can't complain, other than mystified. I don't know who ran into my mailbox. I haven't even gotten that story yet. I don't have a mailbox. And on top of that, four letters from the MVD, I give up.
Yeah, that's crazy. Well, we had a fun night. We went out to eat, and then we stayed for pub trivia.
Oh.
Yeah.
Good.
We didn't do that bad. We didn't do that good, but we did, like, in the middle. We got a 29. The winners got a 38.
Uh-huh.
So we did all right. There was this one category where, what, did you know that umbrellas were once used only by women?
You're right.
Did you know that?
Yes.
You did?
Yes, and parasols. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they were parasols, and they were a style thing, and it was more like on the good days to keep the sun off your face. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And you know, I mentioned many times that Phoebe Snow, the artist, took her name from a character in Lackawanna Railway's ads from the turn of last century when trains were very dirty, and the ad said, "Miss Phoebe Snow of Buffalo travels Lackawanna lines," and you'd see her with her parasol and white and her white outfit and all that, and it was just typical of that. So yes, I for whatever reason, I know this.
And he had one category where he announced all the questions sounding like Stephen Hawking.
Oh, how could you understand them?
Yeah, it was difficult. He said he was trying out something new, and everybody hated it.
Well, I think
so. You could hardly hear him with all the people talking.
Right, right.
Stuff,
that, no,
you know?
that doesn't work.
Yeah, it didn't work. It didn't work out well.
Yeah.
But we had a fun night, and we thought it was the Rolling Stones, the biggest selling band of all time. We thought it was the Rolling Stones, but it was the Beatles.
Yeah, it is the Beatles, indeed. Yeah. Although, you know, I would assume at some point that will be broken only by virtue of how much bigger the markets are. But then again, as I say that, you know, I don't even really understand how music is really sold anymore because, you know, it's not hard media. So I know the record labels make 80% of their income from streaming. And, you know, my head just pops and I say to myself, I'm too old for this. But it's a formula.
And on YouTube. Yeah, YouTube.
Yeah, yeah, well, that's part of streaming. So I really don't know. In fact, I'm not sure what made me think of this, but when I woke up yesterday morning, I remember when I worked at Columbia Records at Epic, we had 20 branches, and I thought to myself, I wonder if they have any branches anymore. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, they have the one in L.A.
Well, no, but I mean for promotion, they would have 20 branches where they would have a promotion guy who, in about 68, they separated promotion and sales into two different divisions, which was just insanity, I thought. But nonetheless, they would, you know, always have a market manager and a sales guy and a promo guy for radio. And there were 20, count them, 20 branches. And I'm going to have to look that up now. So hang on a minute. Don't go away. Stay right where you are.
Okay.
And we'll pick it up right there on WGN Radio.
Anytime at all you're near me, 'cause you're near, you cheer me. That's a very special reason for a very special love. We don't need to speak a word, dear. Still each word is heard, dear. That's a very special reason for a very special love.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That's Johnny Nash. Yeah, I can see clearly now. Reggae Johnny Nash. Yeah, well, that's what he was in the 50s, a very special love. And they were grooming him to hopefully give Johnny Mathis a run for his money. He had signed with ABC Paramount and in 58 covered A Very Special Love, which, by the way, had been a Doris Day hit. And Empire was really hoping that that he would be an alternate to Johnny Mathis. And, of course, that didn't happen. He was an actor as well and had done done some stuff that way. And then later, of course, wound up with the whole Jamaica thing that really really made him a big deal. So, nonetheless, I thought Very Special Love was a terrific record as far as that goes. He was going to be a heartthrob. So, would have turned 83 this weekend. He was from Houston, died in Houston in 2020. He was 80 years old when he died. So, 888-876-5593. And we were talking with Leah and Marcus Hook. And so, I tried to look that up, Leah. I don't think there are any branches anymore. So, I don't know how records are promoted.
Wow, I don't know either.
Yeah, yeah.
That's weird.
You know, you mentioned Philadelphia. There used to be a branch right there in Bala Cynwyd. Gone. Everything seems to be gone. You know, I looked up the Cincinnati branch, see, you know, Julie Godsey would be dead by now, but she used to be the Epic gal. Or I looked up Atlanta, see if Mert Prohl was still around. He'd probably be no longer with us either. But in any event, no, I, you know, there, Lenny Pizzi, I couldn't find anybody.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, because when I worked for Y100, I remember them coming in with
Of course, yes, once a week, you betcha. And that'd be the deal. And like I say, they had 20 branches. And, you know, I have no idea when that stopped, but I think that's completely gone. And, you know, it's interesting. We at the radio stations I own, we don't get records in the mail anymore or CDs in the mail. What we wind up doing, two things. We'll get all these ridiculous emails for downloads, which, you know, good luck on that. I trash them before they go anywhere. But there's a company that does like a sampler CD where there'll be MP3 cuts, but they'll have like 50 of them on there that they'll send out like once a week from various labels all together. And I hand that to the guy who programs my country station, and I guess he uses it. I have no idea.
Do you get books? We used to get a ton of books.
You know, I don't, because I don't have any talk show, you know, on those stations. There is no talk. But yes, back in the day for talk radio, they got books the same way that music radio got records. Hang on a minute. Stay where you are. We'll pick it up there next hour right here on WGN Radio. James, that's Frederick Knight. Yeah, 1972. I've been lonely for so long on Stax. And Frederick turns 79 tomorrow, and he's still with us, born in 44 in Birmingham, Alabama. And he not only was a singer and a songwriter and a producer, but quite the businessman. He usually owned his own publishing. Good for him. He wrote Ring My Bell for Anita Ward and others. So, yeah, did some other stuff as well. But I thought, as far as his own stuff, I've Been Lonely for So Long was the big deal. And when Stax faded away into the distant, Frederick Knight started his own record label, and it was a Juana Records, and had the Controllers on it. and you know, Anita Ward, as I mentioned, and stuff like that. But I don't know what happened to that. In any event, there's no pity party for Frederick. He's doing just fine. So 888-876-5593. And by the way, I heard from Barbara. Hi, Barbara. And she says, yep, the four letters are an example of AI. No, I'm telling you, it's not artificial intelligence. It's AS, artificial stupidity. I'm convinced that's the deal. But I mentioned the new moon. And of course, you know, if you're going to write your law of abundance checks, do it before you go to sleep tonight. But she suggests that during a full moon, take an empty purse outside, open it while yelling at the moon, fill it up, fill it up, fill it up three times, then run back into the house before the neighbors call the police, which is actually a much better process than I had heard years ago. Venus Andrecht was on my show, and she had a full moon thing, but you had to dance nude outside or something, and you talk about calling the police. So the fill it up sounds pretty good to me. All right, so back to Leah. That's your...
Hi.
Yes, yeah, that's your cue. Take it away.
we were talking about books.
Yes, right, yes.
Yeah, we weren't a talk station either, but we used to get tons of books. As soon as we changed over from KISS 100 to Y100, for some reason we started getting tons of books.
Wrong mailing list, but that's great.
Yeah, and they used to take them and put them on this table in the lunchroom, yeah. And everybody would just take what they wanted.
Well, you know, there were guys, like there was a guy, he's no longer alive, but Irwin Zucker. Irwin Zucker used to be a record promoter. He had a company, Promotion in Motion, and he also had Double Shot Records, so he was responsible for things like Brenton Wood. Well, after the 60s, he realized, my God, there's more money in books. And he became like the biggest book pusher ever. And
really?
Yeah, I think he just died a couple of years ago now. But yeah, I would say this man probably sent radio stations conservatively 100 books a month, you know, and a lot of them were self-published type things. But not only he was the publicist for Frankie Lane's Lucky Old Son and things like that. So he had a number of titles that were legit.
Wow, Frankie Lane. My dad worked with him a lot.
He was good. I liked Frankie Lane.
Like Brenton Wood.
Well, me too. Oh, absolutely. In fact, when I was at KOA in Denver, Irwin Zucker wanted me to interview one of his authors, and I said, I'll make you a deal. I'll interview one of your authors if you can get me Brenton Wood. And he did. He found him.
And we did.
Yeah,
good.
I had him on the air for 3 hours.
Excellent.
So, yeah, absolutely. But did your dad like working with Frankie Lane?
Oh, yeah, I guess. Okay. I don't know. Me and my dad didn't get along. We didn't really talk that much.
Oh, well.
But, yeah, I guess he did. He worked with him, and he worked with Billy Eckstein. And,
oh, yeah.
And he took me to see Billy Eckstein in Atlantic City when he was working there.
Sure.
But he was old by that time, and I guess he had gone downhill, and he didn't sound that good to me. I don't know.
Well, toward the end of his career, he was on Motown, believe it or not. Berry Gordy put him on the label.
Really?
Yep. And some of them weren't bad, you know, and then some of it was, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, this was the bad part.
I guess. All right. So, but that's not why you called.
No, I was just telling you about the pub.
Yeah. That's great.
Quiz thing.
That's great.
But do you know who the first person to break 1 million views on YouTube was?
I'll never know this. Who was it?
It was Lou Bega.
Oh, really? Mambo number 5.
Mambo number 5, yeah.
Right, right. And few people know that was a remake of a Perez Prado record.
Really?
Of course.
That was a remake?
Yeah, of course it was. You thought he came up with it?
Yeah, I did.
You really did?
I really did.
Uh-huh.
Do you have the original?
I probably do on this computer because I was a Perez Prado fan, you know, Patricia and all that. But actually, you probably don't know if you don't know Mama. Let me see if it's on here. If it is,
I'd love to hear it if you have it.
Oh, yeah. No, I know I've got it. It's just, is it on this computer? So
sometime this week or whatever, you know, when you get around to it.
There's Patricia. Yeah, I can play this for you.
Okay, cool.
All right. I'll make sure it's my next bumper.
All right, thanks.
Okay, good deal.
Thanks, Raleigh.
Okay, bye. So, absolutely, yeah, Patriz Proto and Cherry Pink and Apple Blossom White and Patricia were his big hits. But yeah, he's the original Mambo number 5. And I think it was about 1949 for that. So, We'll get to James on the South Side, who gave us another 8,432 stories for this this week alone. And yeah, just the links keep on coming. And Jimmy P on the South Side's got some requests, and I want to hear them. So we'll get to that too. Brian and Joliet. All right. Medical research. Always frightening. And Fran and Gary and Austin are checking in. So all this and more coming up on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That's the very first one, RCA 1949. I've got others too, because you can get the lyrics, you know, a little bit of Rita and all that stuff. So Perez Prado had that in some of his versions as well. But this was the very first one. And he was an interesting guy. He was a Cuban and born there in 1916. And he had eventually wound up in Mexico. And what was interesting about that is he didn't have a work visa, and he got kicked out of the country. And he had moved to Mexico right when he signed with RCA and when he made Mambo No. 5. And next thing you know, he's kicked out of the country. And there was a story that said, well, that's because he did a mambo version of the Mexican national anthem, and they got rid of him. Well, no, that wasn't it at all. It was that he, in fact, was there without a work permit, and he had crossed paths with a businessman who wound up reporting him to immigration, and actually wound up bribing the immigration official so he could finish the album he was working on before being deported. And I think that deportation was 53, and he wasn't able to return until 64. Maria Victoria interceded with Mateos, who was the president of the time, that allowed him to come back. But I'll tell you, in the 50s, he was a very big deal. And as far as that goes, he retired in Mexico City, and with his wife and two kids, and it was around quite a while. So all right, that's Perez Prado. I have to find the version where we got the lyrics as well. But that's the original. So 888-876-5593. Is 8888 Raleigh. All right, so requests, we got them. Well, Jimmy P on the South Side has impeccable taste, so let's find out what he wants to hear. So what do you want to hear, Jimmy P? Hello, Jimmy P. Don't tell me he left us. Didn't stick around after after Perez Prado. Yeah, maybe he was afraid I was going to play cherry picking apple blossom white. No worries. All right, so with that in mind, Brian is in Joliet. All right, Brian.
Hi, Raleigh. Hope you're doing well.
Can't complain.
Good. Well, about a week and a half ago or so, you were very highly important thing you brought up about individuals, if at all possible, do you know, when they have any health problem and they go to a doctor, that they should do their own research.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I believe that just the truth that no one should be underline coerced. I don't care what kind of doctor it is, into taking something that you know, they don't know for sure what it's going to, or in all probability that could do more harm to their body, because every individual's body is different.
Well, right. The prevailing allopathic model doesn't want you to believe that, but of course you're right. It's very interesting because we now have more ads marketed directly to the consumer by pharmaceutical companies than probably any other country in the world. But at the same time, they are still using the model of your doctor knows best. And, you know, this goes back to a time where not that many decades ago, where basically doctors were sacrosanct, so to speak. They it was their word, and you just listened and obeyed. And the reality today is that it behooves everyone to do their own research. And you know, if you're ever in a situation where you're being coerced, well, that's something to consider making a change. It's perfectly fine for a doctor to weigh in and give you the benefit of his expertise, but he should respect your choice.
Absolutely. And, you know, one size does not fit all.
Absolutely true. But like I say, they, you know, unfortunately now with, you know, outcome-based and all that, they want you to believe that it does. They want you to believe it's cookbook medicine. And the first time this was codified in any ways, when Hillary tried to get her health care plans in like 93 or so, that was the first time that it was, you know, really codified that, yeah, we have a cookbook, if you will, that the only treatments to be approved are those which show the efficacy. But of course, that belies the fact that everybody's body is different. We're in an interesting time right now, and the one thing I would say is that before anybody goes, say, into a hospital or something like that, have a strong advance directive. Whatever your wishes are, you should make sure that they will be carried out.
Yeah, and that's not always, you're right, but that's not always so easy. You know?
Well, that's why you do that before you're sick. You do that when you're well. You have a strong advance directive, and you pick someone for power of attorney for healthcare decisions who you can trust, because that power of attorney does not have to follow your wishes. A lot of people don't realize that. They can do whatever they want. So you need to make sure that it's somebody you fully trust to bring forth whatever it is you want or do not want.
Yeah, well, that's another point, is you have to have someone you can trust.
Yeah, well,
I could give you examples about what happened to me.
Everybody can. And, you know, sadly, the worst cases very often are with the best intentions. In other words, sometimes it's never good to pick one of your children if they're going to keep you alive no matter what, and that's not your desire. You know, there's a number of reasons why people who might actually think they have your best interests at heart will not carry out what you want carried out. So it's important that you've got somebody with integrity, but somebody who will carry out your wishes.
Yeah, in my case, I already, you know, took care of that part of it.
Yeah, so you're good to go.
Yeah, well, I already made my point. Maybe we say some lies out there.
Well, you know, responsibility comes with the package. I remember many years ago when I was working with Chuck Riley, his wife needed a gynecologist, and as it turned out, that the one I was using was from her hometown, Duncan, Oklahoma. And I said, I got a great guy. He's from Duncan. You'll like him. And so she goes, and I said, well, what did you think? She said, well, I really didn't like him. And I said, why not? She said, well, he didn't tell me what to do. He gave me all the choices and said it was up to me what I wanted to do. I don't want a doctor to let it up to me. I just want them to tell me what to take. I thought, well, there you go. Not too many people, fortunately, share that viewpoint.
Would you like me to switch topics?
Absolutely.
To a lighter note?
Absolutely. Go for it.
Oh, okay. Well, then, good. I'm not going to name the particular cable channel. This is going to be on, because I'm not going to, you know, endorse this or that.
What is it?
People could. It's a documentary. It's going to be on Labor Day night on Little Richard.
Okay.
And Richard Penman.
Right.
And speaking of him, and I was talking with you about covers and originals. Little Richard or Richard Penniman, he wrote a song called "Directly From My Heart to You."
Mm-hmm.
You may have heard it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, the cover version.
The Mothers of Invention.
Oh, you know that already.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I think that was one of their the original Mothers.
Yeah. It was Zappa. Sure. And remember, Zappa was a fan, and I always have a real soft spot for him because he loved East L.A. music, and he was big on doo-wop and other R&B
yeah.
oldies. So sure, directly from my heart to you, you betcha.
The lead singer, you see, with the original Mothers, who finally, I think, broke up in 69, they did the cover of it, Zappa and the other lead singer, last name, the man's Collins, I believe. I think they did a wonderful cover of it. And anyone out there who's interested, if they get the LP anymore, it was on Verb, I believe, the label. And I used to play that when I was a disc jockey. And I wanted to say, oh, yeah. The LP was entitled "Weasels Ripped My Flesh."
Yeah, yeah. It was 1970. You betcha. By the way, the Little Richard version—that was when he was with Johnny Otis' show, and they first recorded it in '53, but it was released in '56. And the news is happening right now as I speak. So I think I need to shut up and go to that. But yes, a fine choice, Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention. You betcha.
Well, I just wanted to, didn't want to have you reading tabloids.
That's very, very welcome. Always good to hear from you. Call again tomorrow night. Talk to you later. Bye.
All right. Take care, Raleigh.
Deal. Yes, anything with the tabloids, right? Well, we'll find out what's going on in the quote-unquote legitimate news with David Jennings right here on WGN Radio.
From my heart to you, directly from my heart to you. Well, you know that I love you. That's why I feel so.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Yeah, Little Richard, he wrote it directly from my heart. That was on Modern. They brought it out in 1966. Originally, it was the flip of Little Richard the Boogie, and that was on Peacock, yeah, Don Robey's label in 56. And like I say, he recorded it in 53. And when they first released it on 56, it wasn't on a 45, it was on a shellac. I think they ultimately did bring 45 versions of that out there. But yeah, directly from my heart to you. All right, so 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, Fran and Gary and Austin, what's happening tonight?
Oh, not much. You get two of us for the price of one.
Yay! All right. A bargain!
Was it Saturday? Yeah, whatever day it was, it doesn't matter.
Yes,
we were okay. We were listening to, was it
Rewound
Radio? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And they were playing some air checks of B. Mitchell Reed. Did you know him by chance?
Yes, not well. He, I'll tell you a funny story about him, though. This is hilarious. When I was working for Tom Rounds, they had Increase Records, and they were putting out that series of old jocks. I'm trying to think what it was now. But they
Cruisin'.
Cruisin', the original Cruisin'.
I had those albums.
Okay, right. And the original ones were good before they, you know, bastardized them with the wrong songs and stuff. But the original ones, yes,
yeah.
And that was Ron Jacobs, who was a crazy man, and Tom Rounds. And I remember how hard they laughed when they first started to do it, because I said, where did you find the air checks? And, of course, it turned out those weren't air checks. Those were recreations in the studio at Watermark. None of them were air checks. Well, I didn't know this. And so they thought that it was just hilarious that I was, I was believing it was for real. And then it comes time, because BMR was one of them. But BMR by that time had gone to KLOS in Los Angeles and was an AOR jock, all right, which was a decidedly different approach from WMCA.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the thing. One of the things that we were talking about when we were listening, because he went, I think they started it with an air check from 65.
Yeah, I think they started with WMCA, which we, of course, missed.
Right.
We didn't even hear that.
Yeah, we didn't hear that one, but we heard, you know, I've heard enough. I heard him when he was on KFWB, and I just sort of remember. But how he went from, you know, just the jock to, you know, just fit into the kind of the underground, you know, so well.
Well, exactly. And, you know, he started out in New York doing a show. They called it Birdland Jazz. So Moish Levy was in this somewhere, right, in 1956. And then he gets the job at KFWB. And I remember he called himself the boy on the couch. For what reason? I don't know. But, of course, you know, KFWB was the first major top 40 station in L.A. You know, sure, Art LeBeau had been at K-pop and things like that. But as far as a 24-7, you know, effort, it was Color Channel 98. And that was, you know, the Swinging Seven, which was, what, Bruce Hayes and Al Jarvis and Joe Yoakam, Elliot Field, Bill Balance.
Yep.
Yeah, right. So B. Mitchell Reed had 6 to 9 o'clock. And the fastest tongue in the West. And in 63, Ruth Meyer hired him at WMCA for a couple of years. And in fact, they also hired Jack Spector. And the two of them had gone to college, to high school together. I think Jack was maybe 2 years older than Mitch, whose name actually was Burton Mitchell Goldberg. It was a B. Mitchell Reed. But in any event, they both were at MCA, and they were terrific. But then, of course, 65, he decides he's going back to L.A., which is what allowed Gary Stevens to go from Lucky Keener 13 in Detroit to WMCA. That's how he got that job. But in any event, it was the Monterey Pop Festival, he always claimed, that caused him to, I have to go in a different direction. And, of course, you know, the different direction was Tom.
Yeah, that's what they were saying on their little...
Well, that was Tom Donahue. And, you know, Tom Donahue had also been a top 40 jock and a good one. He'd been in Philadelphia. In fact, he was in Philly when the Paola hearings broke out. And so he had to be off the air a while for the obvious reasons.
Then
he goes out to KYA in San Francisco. And what killed his top 40 career, this is an absolutely true story, is that every year, the jocks had to go to the Santa Clara Valley Youth Fair, right? And you might remember this event. And so here is Tom Donahue from KYA, and this was either 65 or 66, but I think it might have been 60. But in any event, they had the KYA display next to the Fender guitar booth.
And oh, no.
Yes. And, of course, the Fender guitar booth was set up so that any kid could come and, you know, Wang Chung on their very own, you know. And, of course, you can imagine sitting next to this. So at one point, Tom Donahue says to his engineer, "Bud, I'm going out for some coffee." He never came back. I mean, as far as I know, not even to pick up the final paycheck. He was just gone. And so he thought, enough is enough. And, you know, he wasn't, you know, real young at that time. And, of course, he and Bobby Mitchell were the guys who used to bring the concerts to the Cow Palace. So he had and a lot of good R&B stuff. I mean, Tom knew R&B, no doubt about it. And so meanwhile, mm-hmm. here he is, it's like 65, and he's on his couch at home, and he's listening to these like imports, and he's getting stoned out of his mind, clearly. And that's when, you know, he becomes the father of underground radio, you know. And the interesting thing was, he was not an FM visionary. It's that he could buy the time on an FM station for $10 an hour. And so that's how it became on FM, because, you know, nobody was going to sell him that on AM. And so
right.
that's how it all started. But he had Autumn Records at the time. Remember, the Bo Brummels were on that. And
Yeah,
that was his, and a bunch of other things. But anyway, here comes Mitch, who runs into Tom, and while the rest is, as they say, history, right? And, you know, that was a mess. But Donnie, you wound up, you know, getting involved with Metro Media and all that stuff. But Reed, of course, wound up, before KLOS, because he had gone to MET when Donnie was running things. And then he left, and he was working at KRLA for like a year. And then back at KMET. And then he went to KLOS in 79, and he was there until 82. And he was, inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Legends of Rock Radio Programming for the KMET stuff. But of course, you and I would love the, you know, the top 40 Motormouth approach. Well, back to Watermark here, and they're producing for Increase Records with Ron Jacobs, these Cruisin' series. Well, they had to go out and score uppers to basically feed them to B. Mitchell Reed to get his voice that fast. And so they drugged him. They absolutely drugged him and had no problem with this. And I remember at the time thinking, I don't know. You know,
like, I wonder how many jocks they did.
As far as I know, they didn't have to drug anybody else. I never heard about it. I remember remember the drugging of, and I wasn't there that night or anything like that, but I certainly was there on some nights when things flowed that would otherwise not be legal. But that's how they got him to do that album. And so here I was thinking they were getting old air checks. But before he went to KLOS, after MET, in between the two, he had coronary bypass surgery. And he had a heart condition that was never resolved. And that's why he was only 56 when he died, about. I think it was 83. I think probably the substances didn't help over the years, but he absolutely did have, a verifiable heart condition. So, yeah, the wide, wide, weird world of BMR. Yeah.
Wow. So, yeah.
One of the snippets on the air check that was fascinating to me was from KPPC.
Uh-huh.
And in that air check, I think it was on a Sunday night, and they were signing on the AM.
Uh-huh.
For I don't know how long they were on, but I understand that AM was on like once a week.
Right. Right.
On 1240, right?
So. There was a KMPX was involved in this too, and KPPC. Absolutely. But, the interesting thing is, you know, these are years when nobody cared about FM, that's for sure. And if you're AM and you're not covering all of Los Angeles, well, you know, good luck to you. So,
I think he made some joke about, you know, you could hear him within 100 feet of the transmitter
well,
or something.
Yeah. I kind of have a near and dear thought about him because they were AM 1240, much like KJ. And they were, I think they were licensed to Pasadena, and the PPC was Pasadena Presbyterian Church. And that's what it stood for. And then, of course, the FM, though, became very influential, the 106.7, and became K-Rock later. But Douglas bought them, and Douglas bought them because Douglas had bought the 1230, which at that point was KYPA, I think. And you would have, there were a number of other things, too, including K-Fox over the years. But anyhow, they were on 1230, and they bought them to sign them off in 96. And so that's what happened to the AM. But originally, it didn't go to the 1240, I don't think, until the great frequency swap, you know, that 1940, whatever that
41,
deal. Right in there, because it had been elsewhere, it'd been like at 1310, you know. But these are in the early days when they had like 50 watts or something. So, and they were at 1210, and there were a bunch of stuff. But I think it was Narba that put them on 1240 and 41. And the problem is, it was only 10 kilohertz from KGFJ, you know, the 1230.
There's
your problem, because KGFJ, of course, was a soul powerhouse. Hang on a minute. Don't go away. We'll pick it up right there on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. We'll forgo the bumper as we're only got about a few minutes before the news comes up. We're talking to Fran and Gary about KPPC, the Presbyterian Church. And the deal was, they not only didn't have much power, but they were only allowed to broadcast on Sunday nights and Wednesdays. And the reason for the Wednesday night and Sunday night had to do with church services. And so they broadcast the church services and then the Wednesday prayer meeting. And that was pretty much the deal. Ultimately, I think they had, 18 hours on Sunday and 5 hours on Wednesday. And that was always a deal. And so the Presbyterian Church decided in 62, we got to try an FM. And of course, 62, that's before the field effect transistor and everything else. So they did try an FM, but, you know, for better or worse, probably worse. And that was the deal. They sold it to Crosby, I think, for about $300,000. And that was the deal there. And the church said that, commercial radio was incompatible with their mission or whatever, you know, whatever that was. And so, I don't know. But see, Crosby.
Oh, yes, those were the days.
That's right. See, but Crosby was the general manager of KMPX. All right. So there's your connection. And
right.
So they sold both the AM and FM, the KPPC, FM and sort of AM, if you know what I mean, and KMPX. They sold it in 69, and they got over $1 million for these stations, and they sold it to the National Science Network.
Now, wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You might know something about the National Science Network, but that's more than I know about the National Science Network, other than they fired everybody. And so, and then the guy who was head of this thing, whatever the National Science Network happened to be, died. All right. So at that point, that's when they it split up. Now we're talking like probably about 73. So that's when Burbank Broadcasting, you know, that's how the 1500 AM winds up getting with some of it. And then there were other owners. It's very bizarre, but. Then the AM got an upgrade in the 80s when they were allowed nighttime operation Monday through Saturday. Nighttime only. Well, of course, 1230 had no nighttime signal that was worth protecting. But bottom line, by now, they're obviously a dollar a holler, because what else do you do? So, you turn this on. The hell with Spanish. You were hearing Hindi program station. Languages that, you don't even understand where on the planet they might be originating. And so then, like I say, Douglas bought KGFJ and relaunched it as KYPA. And that's, remember, it was Personal Achievement Radio. Oh, God, when they all were going to try that. And so, meanwhile, they buy KPPC just to take them dark. And by the way, it cost $825,000 to take them dark. So, we can debate the wisdom of that. The church wanted to lease it back, but that didn't happen as far as I know. So that's that was the deal on that.
Well, and that's fascinating.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And so, B. Mitch was there and all that. So absolutely. And he was great.
Yeah.
I never liked the AOR stuff.
He was a lot of fun to listen to.
Yeah. Yeah. When he was Motormouth. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Because I liked that, I liked that underground stuff then, too, and, it's kind of, I grew up with that. And, I know a lot of the music, because that particular one that we were listening to was not scoped, and I thought, well, a lot of this music definitely would not be to Raleigh's liking. But.
Yeah, like all of it, not to mention the too hip for the room approach. Yeah, no.
Right, exactly.
This did not work for me on any level whatsoever. But it was sort of like one of those train wrecks to watch when you were hearing BMR, who you were expecting to be the motor mouth, and now you hear him and he's laid back, and you think, must have been a change in the drugs. So I don't know.
Yeah. Now they're giving them the downers instead of the uppers.
Exactly, exactly. Don't think it didn't run through my mind. But yes. And
right.
All right. Well, good deal. Great to hear from you, and thank you for calling.
Okay. Thanks, Raleigh.
Okay, bye. Bye. So we'll get to Nick in Baltimore next hour. We're going to talk cart machines. Oh, man. Well, that was actually a direct benefit of that because of WROK. But we talked that story, too. But anything was better than McKenzie's, right? All right. So another hour of whatever's on your mind, including James's stories. Oh, and he's just a Lollapalooza of stories and more coming out on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Yeah, it screams New Orleans, doesn't it? Barbara George, I know you don't love me no more. Indeed, on AFO. And a fine, fine, super fine label. And I think it was Harold Batiste who discovered her. And in the process, who's the guy who got her to the label? I'm trying to think of what his name was. But in any event, Jesse Hill. That was the deal. Jesse Hill. Had got her to Harold Batiste and AFO, and it was a huge hit all the way around. And You Talk About Love, which was kind of a follow-up on AFO, was also really nice. And then she did Send For Me on Sue, which wasn't quite as nice, and that's the deal. But she made it until 2006 in near New Orleans, and just before her 64th birthday died. But I played Barbara because she would have turned 81 this week. Yeah, and I know, still an absolute classic. All right, so Nick in Baltimore, welcome to WGN Radio.
Hey, good morning, Raleigh.
How's it going?
It's going okay. I had a question. I told John I wanted to talk about cart machines, but I had a funny story with that, and I wanted to tie in with the mention something about KYA in San Francisco. It'll tie in with what you're talking about. I enjoyed the story about the L.A. station you were talking about.
KPPC, yeah, the church station.
Yeah. But the cart machines, now, you had an interesting story about, I was going to ask you when they started really using carts. Was that like the mid-60s?
No, it was the early 60s. But, you know, the problem was how to make the tertiary tone work so it would stop where you wanted it to stop. And Vern Nolte, who had been at WJBC, was looking at what was, at the time, the background music machines. And what they were was endless loop tape cartridges, all right? And that was fine, but emphasis on endless loop tape. What Vern thought was, you got to find a way to stop them, you know, where you want them to stop. And so he had a couple engineers, Bailey and Jenkins, and he got together with them, and they came up with the prototypes at JBC. And it was interesting. They had certain requirements. They wanted to be 7.5 IPS. They wanted decent audio. They wanted belt drive motors. And but the big deal was that tertiary tone, that Q tone, so that it would stop where you wanted to stop. That was what was important. And that was first shown at the Illinois Broadcasters Convention in 1958. And so from there, Bailey and Jenkins took it to Gates. And but that didn't work out for whatever reason. I don't remember why. And then they took it to Collins, and they'd had a marketing agreement for that. They were going to introduce it at the 1959 NAB, and something happened there. I think probably the overheating, because the Collins radio didn't have any ventilation in those cases, I think was the deal. But even so, with that in mind, yeah, they overheated, but still, they were kind of the hit of the show, and they sold 45 radio stations bought it. And the interesting part was, yeah, there was an overheating issue, but that was not the big problem. The big was how to build them fast enough for the orders. And at the same time, in D.C., near you, WWDC Ross Bayville was working on what was the Spotmaster. And he, which for better or worse, we could talk about that all night. But anyway, he debuted that in 58. Now, interestingly, you know, today technology is such that communication is instantaneous. It would be impossible that somebody would be doing it in D.C. and someone else would be doing it in Illinois and they wouldn't know about each other, but they didn't. And so BE agreed to manufacture the Spotmaster. And so the Q-tone was originally, I think, 850 hertz, and they changed that to 1 kilohertz, but anyway, and changed some of the head configuration and all that. But so that was the deal. Now, what was interesting is, remember, the person I mentioned was Vern Nolte, who was the one who really wanted to get this tone into this endless loop tape. Well, he held a patent on that, and as long as a cart machine was built by anyone at any time, he made some money. And it enabled him to, you know, of course, buy WROK and its FM. And that was a radio station that, you know, here it is in Little Rockford, Illinois, and it was flush with money all the time. And that's why. But McKenzie came in at the same time, and that was really a cluster in so many ways. But, you know, that was recorded on reel-to-reels, and it was wound into that you know, metal cart thing, and it was spliced, and they were using reflective stripes rather than a tone. And you know, then you had Schaefer, which of course, you know, they were in the automation business, and RCA, but I don't know if RCA ever, and then Ampex got into the mix. And I would say, you know, the early stuff, you had the Spotmaster, you know, where you had to take that lever and by manually pull it down, and then you had a Collins, and you had a Gates, and I would say that I was that's Spartamatic. Why didn't I think of that? But anyway, trying to think of who else. There were others, Tapecaster. I think that the first station to use carts almost exclusively was actually WLS before they were Top 40, when it was Prairie Farmer, and that was ATC stuff. And then KQV, their chief engineer, who later went to LS, was the instigator of that. And then CFL in Chicago had some early, the RCA machines I told you about. And so I would say you're starting to see it in the early 60s. Now, you're not seeing it in the early 60s for all of the quote-unquote records at that point. That came throughout the 60s. But the idea that you're putting commercials on them, just like you were on the McKenzie's, it was used, absolutely. And, of course, it was what kind of made automation work, as far as that goes. So the carousels and all of that stuff. But
I'm familiar with those.
Yeah, I'm sure. And you're familiar with, oh my God, you walk across the room and static electricity starts to change the events or play them all at once. Yes, no, I'm very good at that.
Spotmaster and Tapecaster.
Yeah, right, exactly. And all that. So
we had those.
ITC was good, and I think Plow bought all ITC stuff, as I recall. So, you know, and then, but even into the 70s, I mean, carts were the thing. Remember the Audescord? I still have some of those machines, actually. they were cheap.
We had to wind ours.
Well, sure. Absolutely, that was not unusual. And, you know, the Fidelipax, of course, and the 3Ms and all of that, of course. Yeah. And carts were in use to one degree or another for 40 years. Mm-hmm. If you say 59 is really when it's introduced, well, 99 is probably the last of it. So, you know, that's a good long time.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah.
I liked them, but we had to, you know, and I'm familiar with the Q-tones you were talking about, because when I had to card up the records, you know, they were carding up the records, and also when you did production, you had to do it on cart, and you would, you know, you'd have to put the Q-tones on so that, like you say, so it would stop where you wanted it to stop.
Right, and that was the key to make it work, and that's what Vern Nolte held the patent on.
Yeah, well, you know, I had a funny story about, another funny story about, because I don't know if I ever said this on the air, but one of my first couple of weeks down there at the Annapolis station, and they had dropped Larry King, and they went to music overnight.
All right.
We had all night shows.
Yeah.
And the carts, we had these triple-deckers, ITC
right.
carts. And they had bought these. They had quit doing the wind. You know, where we didn't have to wind the carts anymore. They bought a whole package of carts.
Right.
Well, there was lubricant in these carts, and it would gum up the machine. So my first couple of weeks on the air, within the first couple of weeks, the tape machines jammed up. I had to. This is my first couple of weeks on the air. I had to take the cart machine apart.
Yeah, Q-tips, isopropyl alcohol.
I had to pull everything apart. Yeah. Screws are flying everywhere.
Right.
And we had turntables too, so all of a sudden I was playing records again, and then, you know, I fixed it because, you know, they needed them for the morning show. So that was my baptism by fire.
You know, I didn't encounter using carts for the records until 1977, and the beginning of 77. I went to Durham for a little while, and that was the first time I saw it. But the carts were an afterthought for this particular control room and this particular board, and they had four of them, which they brought them all in on the same pot. Now, this meant the only way you could possibly fade was to know very well how that cart was going to fade on its own, because there was no way for you to fade a pot. And, you know, I mean, they thought that this was just perfectly fine, not a problem. And, you know, I think everybody has similar stories about carts, you know, to say the least. But
well, our board was hooked up backwards, so audition was program and program was audition.
All right.
So.
Well, as long as you know it.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
it doesn't much matter as long as you're aware.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the KYA story.
Yeah.
Real quick. That, they were 1260.
Yes.
Right? WWDC was 1260.
Yes.
Now, I had a question. Now, I remember WWDC as a middle-of-the-road station. Johnny Holiday was over there,
right.
But he was also at KYA.
Right.
And he was doing the Top 40 thing. Very good.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was talking about Johnny Holiday just so weird. Sunday night, I was having dinner with somebody, and we were talking about Johnny. Yeah, he's originally a Miamian. Yep.
Oh, okay.
Went to North Miami High.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, graduated, I think, in 55.
Oh, okay. But he came from KYA and went to WWDC.
Right.
But wasn't WWDC Top 40 like in the early 60s?
For a minute.
Okay.
You know, the deal is it was full service MOR ostensibly from the mid-50s till about 1970. But then in about 64, They were top 40. And it was really weird because they were, you could look at their, they actually printed surveys. And you could see that they were almost identical to PGC. Of course, PGC's problem is, you know, was a daytimer. So,
right.
So it was MOR except for that moment. And, you know, it was briefly top 40. And then I think in the 70s, at some point, the latter 70s, they were again for a minute.
Yeah, they were. Yeah. In 76.
Okay, yeah. See, I remember yeah. that. And
it didn't last very long, but no. It was 76 because
right.
that was when RC went all news or something
right.
or
and then
news
they,
talk.
Right, and then they wound up going like hot AC after that or something. But
right.
Yeah. Absolutely. So I think that Johnny Holiday talks about that in his autobiography. He did write one.
Okay, yeah, and his book, I got to get that too.
Yeah.
But that was interesting when they were both owned by Abaco Embassy, I think.
Well, right.
At one point.
Yes, and of course, you know, I always said the Abaco summer clearance sale. What happened was Abaco invested in Rancho Bernardo in San Diego, which, you know, later became very, very profitable, but it was a very bad land investment at the time. And so Avco made the decision that they were going to sell their leisure time divisions, and that included Avco Embassy Pictures, Avco Records, and the radio stations. And of course, at that point, the radio stations were headquartered at WLW in Cincinnati. And so it was Charlie Murdoch who was charged with selling them all. And he did. So yeah, there were a number of deals, and yes, KYA was absolutely one of them. And but also, you know, Lowry Mays' station. That was the first thing Lowry bought with Red McCombs' money. Bought OAI in San Antonio.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And they were top 40 for a bit.
Yeah, but you know, most of these stations were. For a while, if you will, you know, I mean, depending, they tried to do just about anything that they could, but yeah, Crosley was before Abaco was Crosley, so yeah, I'm going to get Johnny Halliday's book. I do not have it, From Rock to Jock. I'm going to going to get that. So
okay.
So yeah. But yeah, Crosley had DC at 1260 and OAI and a couple other things as well, and some FMs too early on. So yeah, that was the deal.
Yeah, and their FM in DC was the station with the heart of gold for a while.
Right.
And after Beautiful Music, and then they went to DC 101, which
right.
That's when I gave up listening to them. That's another
yeah.
I'm not an AOR fan.
Yeah, nor am I. But you know, it certainly had its audience.
Oh yeah, but anyway, I appreciate the time and
absolutely,
and I appreciate the program. And hey, thanks for answering my questions.
Well, and thanks for mentioning Johnny Holiday's book. I'll get a copy and let you know.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
All right, thanks.
Appreciate
a lot.
It. Yeah, I'm a sucker for stuff like that. Happy to read it. 888-876-5593, 888-88-RALEIGH on WGN Radio.
When my friends told me you had someone new, I didn't believe a single word was true. Show them all I had of faith in you. I just kept on saying, oh no, not my baby. Oh no, not my sweet baby. You're not like those other guys who lead you. There's truth somewhere and I should use my head, but I didn't listen to what she said. I kept right.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Well, it doesn't take a lot to get me to play Maxine Brown. Just love it, and that's my favorite. And she turns 84 on Friday, and she's still with us. So happy birthday to Maxine Brown. 888-876-5593. 8888 Raleigh. So what's going on in Las Vegas? We're going to find out from Eduardo. What's happening, Eduardo?
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting story. Seven hotels over there in Vegas having problems with bed bugs the last 18 months. And the first thing that came up to my mind is, this may be true or not, is a shortage of a housekeeping staff.
You know, it's interesting. Bed bugs are so vexing. And when you're talking about these big hotels with tons of rooms and all that, even though it sounds like a big headline, seven hotels, you're really looking at like one room in each of them. You weren't looking at like an infestation where the whole hotel was down. What I wonder is how do you prevent it in general? I don't think it's just common housekeeping. And, you know, that said, what I find interesting about that is that so many places, they superficially do housekeeping, but God forbid you drop anything behind the nightstand or something, and you discover that's never been vacuumed in, you know, 20 years or what have you. So I don't know how thoroughly any of these places clean that way. You know, I don't know what their schedule is to do a deep clean. I know it's certainly not, you know, between guests. But I looked at that when I heard that headline, too. And near as I can tell, like I say, it's like one room in each place. I don't know that that's not to be expected.
Yeah, and they say that people should be careful where they place their suitcase from one point to another, because if they just leave it, they can also leave that.
You leave with bed bugs. Yeah, I don't know that much of the protocol, but, you know, in thinking about it, I can't imagine how you fully eradicate that. And it becomes a real problem when it's an entire building. And that's happened, but I haven't heard any incident in any of these stories that any of these hotels have been victimized that way. But how do you stop it?
Yeah,
you know, I don't know.
They clean the room and then they move the people over. They said they're also looking into possibly, some kind of cleaning, you know, some kind of inspection, you know, team to come over and maybe do a cleaning. That's what they say.
Well, you know, there's some practices in hotels that I just absolutely don't like. For instance, between guests, they'll change the sheets, but very often they don't change the blanket. Or they don't change the comforter.
Right.
They don't change all of it. And certainly in many cases, they probably don't change the mattress pad for a year. It seems to me that if you're wanting to control infestations, you're going to be changing all of that between guests. And you're damn near going to be boiling it.
I'm always making sure I'm covered from top to bottom, like long pajamas, a long sleeve, on top of the pillow.
Yeah. Well, you don't get night sweats then. Yeah, right. Except you don't get night sweats then. There's, you know, it depends a bit how far that goes. But yeah, you mentioned the pillow. I always bring my own pillows just for comfort. But when I bring them, I never, ever, ever put them down on top of a bedspread, because I figure that bedspread has been there through many, many guests.
Right. That's a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah, I always make sure it's just contact with the sheets and nothing else. But obviously, vacuuming thoroughly, because that's another thing. How many times do they go in and vacuum the molding? How often are they looking at the seams and the sides and all the things, you know, that can harbor bed bugs? So maybe there needs to be a bigger or a more frequent role of thorough cleaning, but that might be good. But again, I this idea that now these hotels aren't going to clean while the guest is there, period. So if you're there for a week, there's no service for a week, pretty much. They're getting away with this because of COVID. So
right.
Yeah, which you would think at the very least, then that would behoove them to clean it all. And maybe that's a protocol that they need to start adopting, that you, yes, you clean the, you know, you change the mattress pad, you change the you know, the comforter, you change the whatever it is, whatever is on that bed, the bedspread, what have you, you know.
You know, just this is not kind of related, but I did read an article where this is not just like just a point in Mexico, but they found like 28 of 32 states over there had problems with leprosy.
Yeah.
So
that's coming back.
They're going to get that under control.
That's coming back. And, you know, one of the problems we have is immigrants who are not checked for a number of things that have been eradicated here, but it brought back. There's almost no natural defense.
Yeah.
And I don't know enough about the immigration system to know how they checked, but or how if they say, well, you locally acquired the disease, all right, but from what? And you've had a number of cases, like you mentioned, Florida, Central Florida had a number of cases. So
right. Yeah, Texas, California, New York, yeah.
But I don't think that it's screened in most cases. See, that's the thing, and I don't know. Maybe the deal is, and from what I understand, you know, this was going back several years, but it was like the overwhelming majority was immigrants. Okay, so if you're not checking for this among immigrants, why? You know, so
yeah.
I don't know.
See, there you go, checking.
Yeah.
Whether it's in a hotel or it's at the border or anything, are people checking that stuff? It's cleaned or
no,
clean
I,
and
right? No, I think everybody is working. You know, like I say, we're living on our last nerve. Well, I think for most people, it's controlled chaos. It's just keeping the wolf away. I don't think there's too many proactive things in the mix.
Yeah. Well, let me just ask you one more thing before I get off. Hawaii.
Yes.
I saw this person is a surfer over there, and he was doing supplies through his jet skis. But is this a problem if they do like parachute drops with the high winds? Is there a problem with that?
Well, there could be. Depending, I don't know what's going on with supplies. When I was looking at Maui, I basically see three areas, and two of them are inland, not right on the coast there, and one of them of course is the big touristy area. But I'm sure that wind would be a factor, but I don't know where the wind is right now.
Yeah, maybe that's why that idea hasn't been tested.
Right. Right. So, okay, I just looked at Maui, 70 degrees, humidity 77%, and wind 10 miles an hour. So that's not a tremendous amount of wind.
That's not bad, yeah.
No. Uh-uh. So, yeah. Now, I don't see, I'm not, in looking at the seven-day forecast, I'm not seeing any wind forecasted for more than 20 miles an hour. So I don't know. But of course, you know, that's not the same as what might happen during a storm. But yeah, that's an interesting thought. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, good luck to everybody over there. Hopefully
soon. You betcha.
Okay, I'm getting off. All right, maybe I'll call Thursday.
I'll count on it. Thanks.
Have a good one.
Appreciate it.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know what you do with bed bugs. And you know, there's another thing too, and that some people would say, well, you know, you need to eradicate it by spraying or whatever. Well, when you're talking about noxious chemicals, now you have another problem, theoretically, with a number of guests who just can't take that type of chemical exposure. So maybe the answer is you just boil everything between guests, and that would be the blankets and the towels and the bedspread. And they don't. They don't normally clean that stuff, and maybe that's something that needs to be changed. Oh, it was really weird. When we went to the MVD yesterday, I mentioned that they didn't have chairs anymore. Because they have to clean them between people sitting down because of COVID. But then the other thing I noticed was they not only didn't have chairs, but they didn't have those machines you looked into for the vision tests. And they said, oh, no, we can't do that anymore because of COVID. I said, what do you do now? And she's, we hold up a chart. I thought, oh, man, this is a breeze. I'll have no trouble passing the eye test, that's for sure. But I thought, I don't know about this. So, there are some things that are being done for COVID. And then on the other hand, you think there's a lot of things that, you know, could be done that that aren't. So we'll get to James and his stories and Sherry and Naperville and you two coming up on WGN Radio.
There's something on Granddaddy's mind. He went to the doctor, got a brand new pill. The doctor said, son, you ain't over the hill. Now he can't sit still. Great gosh, a mighty one.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Yeah, Howard Tate. Look at Granny Run Run, a Jerry Ragavoy song. And Howard Tate was quite the interesting artist. Yeah. Would have had a birthday on Sunday. Would have been 84 years old. Sadly, died in 2011. And yeah, like I say, quite the interesting life. And his family moved to Philadelphia when he was a kid. And he had been involved with Garnett Mims. And he and Garnett were in a gospel group, the Gainers, and then on the side they were doing some R&B, and then Tate was out with Bill Doggett for a while and came back to Philadelphia, and that's when he ran into Ragavoy, and the first stuff was on Verve, like Look at Granny Run Run. And then later, after Ragavoy, he wound up in about 1970 being produced by Lloyd Price and Johnny Nash. And unfortunately, good stuff, but nothing hit. Ragavoy and Tate got together on Atlantic in the early 70s. More interesting stuff, but no hits. And then he was on Epic. And then he kind of said, this is it, not working out. And he was living in southern Jersey, and he was selling securities. And his 13-year-old daughter died in a house fire. And that was probably the mid to latter 80s. Anyway, he did not recover from that. He developed a drug habit, wound up in a homeless shelter. And then in the mid 90s, he kind of got it together. He was counseling drug abusers and working as a preacher. And that's about the time I got to Philadelphia on WWDB. And he was a listener. And it was interesting. He sent me tapes, actually. And it was fun talking to him. And then, of course, you know, I left town, and that was it. But he continued to do well as far as that goes. Recorded some more stuff and made some appearances and things of that nature. And sadly, died in 2011. He was 72 years old. Multiple myeloma and leukemia is what took him out of the game. But there was something, I'll have to find it. On one of the things that he sent to me, there was a record I just adored, and it wasn't Look at Granny Run Run, which is a great record in 1966, and that was top, I guess, number 12 on the R&B charts, and probably 6 to 7 on the pop charts. But there was something else he did. I'll find that, and if I don't play it tonight, which I probably won't, I'll try to play it tomorrow night. All right, so note to self, yeah, find Howard Tate record. Okay, so James on the South Side, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Oh, I guess I can't complain. How about yourself?
Oh, hanging in there. Well, okay. I did notice that one of my stories that came across was the The multiple heads, bodies found all chopped up. I'm like thinking, this is okay. At this rate, I mean, this is like you're almost thinking, are we into a slaughter pen or something?
Yeah, no, it's one story after another. And, you know, you got people behaving badly. You've got a 95-year-old woman fatally tasered by a cop. Just the whole thing, first graders. Okay. Yeah, right.
A publisher, basically, where they has a heart attack after they've been on the whims of a politician who, and the funny thing was they didn't even run the story.
Yeah, no, exactly. Then you got the Amazon delivery man who was chased and bashed with bottles as a group tries to steal his packages in, I think it was in East Harlem. It's story after story. But you have to like Massive Tapeworm. I mean, any headline that has Massive Tapeworm, you got to like. Unfortunately, it also includes a brown bear. So, and a video that apparently I don't want to watch because it was labeled disgusting. It was labeled disgusting, and you know what? I trust them. I don't.
I trust them too. I didn't watch
right,
it.
Right.
The thing I said, it just emphasized that I think at the time it wasn't the. Wasn't actually acting right, and I said, "Thank goodness for small mercy."
Right, right. So, it's story after story, and it makes you wonder: have we gotten to that depraved state, or is this a thing where we're just hearing about it more often?
I think the news cycle. It's more obvious. It's not just that we're hearing about it because our news catches it more. It is more of it.
Yeah,
like when I heard about the bestiality thing, I said, oh, goodness. I felt sorry for a man's best friend basically prostituted out. Yeah. Oh, boy.
Yeah, no, it's unbelievable, story after story. So was there anything that made you smile?
There was, I think there was one where they found something. They thought this person was dead, and they found this person they had been missing for some number of years or something like that. And that was probably the highlight of the, one of the highlights of it, I think, that kind of made me smile. But there was too many grim ones in this one.
And meanwhile, McCormick wants you to check your spices.
Again.
Right.
If it's one a group that I'm using, I usually try to put them in a refrigerator.
Right. Well, I would think, given the stories that come before it, sorry, McCormick, my spices are the least of my worries tonight.
and it's sad about Hawaii. I hope that at least that the fire thing is this that maybe a nice rainstorm, not too much of a rainstorm.
Right. Yes. Exactly.
No lightning.
No. Exactly. But I'm betting on the tree. I think the tree's going to make it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And hopefully most of these missing are just people who are in shelter somewhere.
Yeah.
That's what I'm hoping. I've always heard Hawaii's beauty and all that, and just think, a lot of this is going to take a couple of generations to come back.
No, you're 100% about right. So thank you for all the stories, and we'll talk to you later. I appreciate it.
Okay,
all
you
right,
take
good deal.
Care.
All right.
John is doing well.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks.
Okay.
Yeah, of course, you know, we went back to make sure the radio stations were all right, and I'm still ticked that someone ran into our mailbox. Yeah, just completely decimated the post, and now it's in such a way they've also slaughtered the mailbox where it won't shut and all that. So we're having the big mailbox discussions here. You know, I'm ready to say, just erect one in concrete. You know, of course, that's not impervious either, but nonetheless, I think we have to pick out a new mailbox, and I think I'm going to locate it between two utility poles this time, so at least there's something else that will be hit first, I hope. So I got a minute left, and that minute belongs to Sherry in Naperville. You need to call earlier, Sherry. The minute is yours.
I try, but David gets off second shift late, and then he's going to call me from Joel and ask me what to buy, blah, blah, blah. But nonetheless, I wanted to say a couple things, but one is I have been so exhausted lately, and yesterday I slept through all the trivia. I slept from like 8:30 our time to 2:30, and David finally woke me up so we could eat dinner. But at any rate, I miss trivia, and at one point I was dreaming, and I thought Johnny D was in our living room.
It's not a dream, it's a nightmare.
No, he's fun, but yeah. I guess in my dreams and my deep sleep, he like proliferated through it all.
That's hilarious.
At any rate, I want to apologize. I don't know why I've been exhausted. A lot of times it happens when there's big fluctuations.
Okay, you got to do it tomorrow night. You've just ended the show. We'll talk to you later, Sherry. All right. So
okay,
on that note,
you.
we thank Adam for keeping us on the air and John for screening your calls. Above all, I thank you for calling. And remember, I've got several tabloids if you don't call tomorrow night. So don't forget your law of abundance check. You got to write it now. It's happening this morning. Good luck. All right. So I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.